Well, good morning. My name is Paul, and I'm one of the pastors on staff here at Newport. As we begin, I want to invite you to think back just a little bit over a year ago, as we were just entering into the pandemic. Now, I'll admit this isn't overly comfortable, but I want to just invite us to sit in that space for just a moment and to pay attention. What were you feeling as we started to realize this wasn't just a small thing? Where did your internal struggles, where were those things? Where were those feelings held for you? I know for me, this was overwhelming. It was debilitating. It felt incomprehensible. There is no way that this was actually happening. I'm sure many of us had these sleepless or restless nights where I would wake up in the morning and feel like, am I in the Twilight Zone? Like, there's no way this can actually really be happening. There's no way that this is reality. And after I found out that it wasn't going to be just a few weeks until we'd return, right, I found myself bargaining, like, what can I do? How can I get out of this? What ways can I change this? Maybe there's something different that I don't know, or, right, I kind of found myself trying to figure this out, and there was this deep pit that formed in my stomach. I felt so disoriented. I didn't know what to do. I felt so empty. And you see, when we were in this moment and in this kind of radical reorientation, I found myself, it was easier for me to believe a lie or my own construction of what I wanted reality to be versus grappling with the reality itself. It was incredibly disorienting. You see, when this kind of thing happens, when an event like this, a dramatic event like this occurs, we're trying to grapple with a reality that doesn't fit the way that we think something should work. We have no categorization for this kind of thing. And so when it doesn't fit into these preconceived categories, these things we thought of before, we come up with an alternative way, an alternative reality to what's actually happening so that it fits within a context that we're more comfortable or more familiar with. It's easier for us to believe a lie than the reality of what's actually happening. The present reality is so great, so outlandish, so unbelievable that we find ourselves feeling this pit, this emptiness. This doesn't fit. This doesn't make sense. We're simply trying to make sense out of something that doesn't. We're grappling with the reality that doesn't fit anything else we've seen before, and so we're trying to make sense out of something that doesn't make sense. Last week was Easter Sunday, and Pastor Britta began our Easter series, actually, because Easter is a season of 6 weeks, 6 weeks of grappling with the reality of the resurrection. And this series is entitled Empty, because as Pastor Britta introduced last week, the first signs of resurrection were actually emptiness. The empty tomb pointed to a living Jesus. And so there's this invitation into experiencing these emptiness feelings, or what this emptiness brings, as a sign pointing towards resurrection. And so the next 5 weeks, this morning and the next four, we're going to be looking at kind of the response to this question. And this is the question I want us to hold the rest of our time this morning, is how do we respond to the reality of the resurrection? This reality that is incomprehensible, it's overwhelming, it's so great, it's so magnificent, we almost don't know what to do, and it's easier to start making things up or believing other things than the actual reality that's in front of us. And our story this morning is actually a little bit divergent. The next 4 weeks after this Sunday, we'll be looking at how the disciples respond to that question, how do we respond to the reality of the resurrection? But this morning, we're going to be looking at the soldiers and the religious leaders who are involved in this story in Matthew. So if you have your Bible with you, or if not, you can follow along. The words will be on the screen. I'd invite you to turn with me to Matthew 28, and we'll be continuing the story from the Easter morning last week, to verses 11 through 15. Matthew 28, 11 through 15. While the women were on their way, some of the guards went into the city and reported to the chief priests everything that had happened. When the chief priests had met with the elders and devised a plan, they gave the soldiers a large sum of money, telling them, "You are to say his disciples came during the night and stole him away while we were asleep. If this report gets to the governor, we will satisfy him and keep you out of trouble. So the soldiers took the money and did as they were instructed. And this story has been widely circulated among the Jews to this very day. Now, this story is actually unique both in our series, but also in particular because this account is only recorded in the Gospel of Matthew. So in the other Gospels, Mark, Luke, and John, this account about the soldiers doesn't appear. One of the main reasons that scholars think that to be true is that Matthew wrote his gospel to a stronger Jewish Christian audience. So he's more concerned about the Jews who will also be reading this story or who will be digesting this narrative. And so he's writing about this Jewish held belief. And he says, Matthew wrote his gospel probably about 30 years after the events took place. And so when he says that there's this rumor, this idea that Jesus' disciples came and took his body away, that rumor continues to this day, 30 years later. And so Matthew is writing this particular narrative about these soldiers because he's primarily concerned with what's called a Jewish Christian audience. He wants the Jews that are reading this to also be engaged in the good news of the gospel. And so this story is unique here. Now, if you think about it, these soldiers are kind of in a pretty big pickle, right? More than likely, these soldiers actually weren't Roman soldiers like those who maybe crucified Jesus, but actually Jewish soldiers. I got it right that time. I'll be honest, that's the biggest tongue twister. Go ahead right now, kids especially, try to say Jewish soldiers 10 times fast. It's super hard, at least for me. Anyways, Jewish soldiers. These are likely soldiers who are Jews. That's what we're going to refer now. Because they don't go back and report to Pilate. If they did, they actually probably would have been executed for what they didn't do. But these are more than likely soldiers who are Jews because they go back and report to the chief priests, to the religious leaders who are Jewish in Jerusalem. Now, the thing about you, as you think about that, these soldiers didn't do exactly what they were supposed to do. The one thing that they were supposed to do is make sure that Jesus' body stays in the tomb, and they fail miserably. And so you can imagine that these Jewish soldiers must be terrified. They're trying to grapple with the reality before them of Jesus' body is no longer here, and look what happened. What are we supposed to do with this reality, this overwhelming, incomprehensible reality that's before them? And so what's interesting is, even in the way that this is written, in how the people respond, right? So in the next few weeks, we'll be looking at how the disciples respond to that question, how do we respond to the reality of the resurrection? And at the very beginning of this, in verse 11, it says, while the women were on their way, which means as they're going, in the original language, it was as they were going out, right? So there's this idea of imagery of going kind of out and opening up, right? It says that the soldiers were coming into the city. And so there's this, even this word picture of going out, the good news of the message of Jesus versus the kind of deception that happens in the internal, the kind of this, the closing off, opening up and closing off, this beautiful way that Matthew describes this. But it's the women go out to proclaim the reality of the resurrection, and the guards come into the city where the religious leaders rationalize away the resurrection. The reality of the resurrection is too great, and so they rationalize this away. They explain it away. And here's the irony about this, the irony about the religious leaders and how they rationalize what's happening before them. The irony is that their plan is to say that their original plan didn't work. Right? Like, how convoluted is that? The whole reason that these religious leaders put soldiers at the tomb was to make sure that Jesus' body wasn't stolen so that, you know, the disciples couldn't claim something. And then what happens is Jesus is resurrected. So the very thing that they're trying to not do, that they can't do, that they ends up happening. So then they, right? This is what happens when we try to reconcile these things on our own. When the reality before us is so dramatically altering and shaking, and we try to reconcile these things on our own, it becomes this convoluted web of lie upon lie upon lie upon lie as we try to explain away the present reality. When we explain away the emptiness, as the religious leaders were explaining away the empty tomb, we miss the resurrection. These leaders explained away the emptiness, and in so doing, they missed the resurrection. Think about this for a moment. The guards who come back to tell these chief priests what happened are some of the very first people to experience the reality of the resurrection. They were firsthand in a firsthand encounter with resurrection. And when they go to the religious leaders to make sense of what happened, the religious leaders explain it away to preserve the status quo and to save their power and their influence. They explain away the empty tomb to preserve their own present reality, their own power, their own influence. When people come to us, are they finding someone who helps them embrace the reality that the resurrection completely changes everything? It alters the course of history. Our reality is entirely different. Or do they find us explaining away and rationalizing present circumstances based on these preconceived notions of our limited religious experience? People do not need us to have all the answers. They need us to be real and to point them to the simple way of Jesus, to a way that often makes no sense but makes all things new. This is the central hinge, the paradoxical truth that I want us to hear this morning. You cannot explain away the resurrection, nor can you fully comprehend it. You cannot explain away this dramatic new reality of a resurrected Jesus, nor can we possibly fully comprehend it. You see, there is a gift in holding the silence and the stillness of emptiness. To not rush on too fast. To not try to fill the void with our own rationalizations, our own conspiracies, our own plans. But rather to sit in the unexplainable. As Pastor Britta introduced us to last week, to embrace the reality of the resurrection is to embrace the reality of the empty tomb. This doesn't make sense. This isn't rational. People don't raise from the dead. The reality of the resurrection is absurd, an entirely different way of comprehending reality. Reality has changed forever. Prolific New Testament scholar N.T. Wright says it this way. The Christian belief is not that some people sometimes get raised from the dead and that Jesus happens to be one of them. It is precisely that people don't ever get raised from the dead and that something new has happened in and through Jesus, which has blown a hole through previous observations. This isn't what's supposed to happen. People don't just come back to life. The tomb was supposed to stay full. Emptiness isn't what's supposed to normally happen. And yet the reality of the resurrection is so absurd, so outlandish, that it dramatically changes the course of human history. That we're 2,000 years later still preaching about this resurrected Lord. It doesn't fully make sense. We can't fully comprehend what's happening. But you see, the resurrection is not primarily something to be explained, but is something to be embraced. This does not mean that we don't try to figure things out. I love to try to figure things out. I love to tinker and ask questions and wrestle. And so we bring our questions, we bring our doubts, we bring our skepticism. And in fact, these are the things that are foundational to our faith because they help us to grow and to strengthen our faith. Pastor Britta next week is going to invite us into that space as she looks at Thomas and the disciples. What is doubt? How do we enter into this space of questioning and skepticism? So this doesn't mean that we have to not try to figure things out. But what it does mean is that we don't have to fully understand, to fully comprehend the resurrection, to embrace the reality of it. A dramatically different reality, a radical disruption to the way that life had gone. And so in our present reality, in a reality of a pandemic, what is the way in which we are responding to the reality of the resurrection? Are we living as resurrected people, people who believe that Jesus was in fact raised from the dead? And how does that impact our day-to-day living? Or are we oftentimes still living in the deadness and trying to rationalize what's happening before us without fully embracing that Jesus has come and been resurrected? When the Jewish leaders come face to face with the empty tomb, they cannot reconcile their own emptiness. We all experience emptiness. We all experience pain. We all experience grief. And so the Jewish leaders come face to face with their own sense of loss. And because they can't reconcile the emptiness of the tomb with their own emptiness, they make something up. They explain it away. They plot and they conspire and they run away to preserve their present reality, which they assume is going to be better than the radically altered reality that Jesus ushers in. When faced with our own emptiness, it can be overwhelming and terrifying and hard to reconcile. So do we run away? Do we try to fill it up with our own conspiracies, our own comforts, our own coping mechanisms? Or do we allow the radical disruption of Jesus, who makes all things new, to meet us in our emptiness? You see, the answers do not come instantly, but the presence of God does. This is the radical reorientation to living as people who believe in the resurrection of Jesus. You cannot explain away the resurrection, nor can we fully comprehend it, because the resurrection changes everything. Our reality has shifted. Nothing will ever be the same. We don't have to fully understand it, but we can fully embrace it, that Jesus is alive, and that Jesus meets us in our emptiness, in our pain, in our grief, in our suffering. And when we enter in with our sisters and brothers who are experiencing pain and grief and suffering, we don't have to give them the answer. We can wrestle with them. We can try to figure things out with them. We can process together, bringing our doubts, bringing our questions. But to not move on and try to reconcile the emptiness on our own, but rather to point to a radically different way of living that believes that Jesus resurrected and that life will never be the same. One of the practices that Pastor Britta and Pastor Scott and I have discerned in this series is this idea of breath prayer, a simple spiritual practice that focuses on our breathing, and a profound metaphor for the filling and emptying that happens, that God has intertwined into our very being. And so as we end our time this morning, as Pastor Britta last week invited a phrase, the phrase I want to invite you into as we focus on our breathing and come before a resurrected Jesus is that we breathe in, you are resurrected, and we breathe out, let what is unexplainable be good news. You are resurrected. Let what is unexplainable be good news. So God, as we come before you now in a space of coming in stillness and silence, recognizing our own emptiness, we pray that you would fill us up with the reality of your resurrection and release us from having to have everything and all the answers. That we can embrace your mystery, and seek to live as resurrection people. I invite you to open your hands, to focus on your breathing, to breathe in, you are resurrected. Let what is unexplainable be good news. Now, as you go on your way, would you receive this benediction? May God go before you, calling you into new life, resurrected life. May he go above you, watching over you, entering in and holding those unexplainable and empty spaces with you. May God go behind you, hemming you in, spurring you on, keeping you from explaining away the resurrection, from moving on too quickly from the emptiness. And may God go within you to give you the peace that makes no sense, to embrace the reality of the resurrection. May you go in peace and serve the Lord today.